safe. Oh, wow. I'm not introducing to you Mr. Finlay Williams, yeah? He's better known as Breeze Block, you know what I'm saying? Come here, Breeze Block, come here.
Oh, hello. Yes, my name is Breeze Block. I used to go to school with Andy. My name is really Finlay, but you used to call me Breeze Block, okay?
Welcome back to another episode of the Retro Asylum podcast, and this is episode 7. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me is...
Mr. Dean Swain. Hi, everyone.
What we should be saying is Happy New Year.
Oh, yes, Happy New Year, and what a wonderful January it is so far. I think half my garden contents got blown away last night.
It is really, really windy out there. It was hectic this morning. I got woken up because I thought the roof was going to fly off my house. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, the wind was making some really strange noises throughout the night. I've got to admit, it woke me up a few times, and I was expecting dustbins to be flown all over the place. The front garden's not too bad, but the back garden, my daughter has got a trampoline,
right,
and that ended up on next door's fence.
Wow.
So it's quite a big trampoline, so hopefully it's not done too much damage to the fence, but I'll fight about that.
I'm a little bit scared, though, because the fact that my house hasn't finished being built yet, the one I'm moving into at the end of the month, and I'm thinking... Hopefully it hasn't been, I don't know, the roof's been blown away or things have been, I don't know, I really hope that hasn't slowed things down.
Yeah, let's hope not, mate.
But yeah, 2012 is meant to be the end of the world, according to the Mayans.
Is that right?
Yep, I think December the 20th is meant to be the end of the world.
Oh, so we don't even reach Christmas Day, that's no good.
Nah.
They say that every year, though, don't they?
Yeah, I think last year some crazy priest said it, didn't he?
Yeah, and then he apologised for it not happening. Strange man.
And then he made another prediction, which, again, didn't happen.
Oh, well.
Yeah, anyway, I don't know why we're talking about mad priests. Let's talk about a little bit about the highlights of last year. So last year, basically, 2011, we saw the end... Oh, someone's phone's going there. I think it's mine. Last year, we saw the demise of 1HMPS Retro, which was my former site.
Yep.
And we started the new site, which is Retro Asylum.
Certainly did, and I've got to admit, I think it's working out very well.
I completely agree with you. I think it's going really well. The forum is nearing 1,000 posts. It's picking up. There's always people on the forum. We've got loads of sort of videos and content on the site. You know, I'm hoping 2012 will make it even bigger and better.
Well, I'm sure it will, mate. You're putting plenty of work into it. I think we all are. You want to go into more like written articles, don't you?
That's one of the directions I want to move into 2012. You know, I want to write news features or articles about a certain game or about a certain programmer. But, you know, there's loads of new directions I think we're going to take the site in 2012.
Yeah. Well, it should be a great year for us.
The next thing I was going to say to you, I haven't really spoken to you since we last recorded the podcast, the previous one. So how was Christmas for you, mate?
Very brief.
Really? Why is that?
It was over so quick. It's the usual boring thing. It's work. I was off Christmas Day.
Right.
And Boxing Day. And then I was back to work, and I had to work all through the new year, into the new year. So New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. And I've only had the last week. No, sorry. I had Monday and Tuesday off of this week.
Right.
So, yeah, I've not stopped. It's been a bit hectic working for the secret organisation that I work for. I'm not allowed to mention. Yeah, well, you know, these undercover units. I'm like the CI5, one of the professionals.
But you are like the Bond. You are Mr. Swain.
Yes, shaken but not stirred.
So what did Mr. Bond get then for Christmas then? What did
you receive? Well, to be honest, Christmas presents, I didn't actually get too much. It was really boring stuff. I can say that because my wife isn't here at the moment, but she's bad. She'll be home soon. So, yeah, it's mainly clothes and what have you. But I did get a handheld console, which is actually an early birthday present, right. Because my birthday is next month, and I'm getting old, 37, guys. this handheld unit is called a canoe. It's spelt different from your canoe boat, but basically it's an open source handheld, which means it's got a Linux or Linux, however you pronounce it, system on it, which means you can port over most emulators. So this gadget, I've uploaded onto it virtually every emulator starting from the Atari 2600 up until the PlayStation.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've not tried every emulator on there yet.
Have you got a Speccy on there, is the
question?
Of
course I've got a Speccy on there. Right. And, yeah, I've been playing Batman the movie and Target Renegade, and all the 1 to 8K sound works on it. It's lovely. It's really easy to use as well, that emulator.
How much do these retail for? Because I'm tempted to get one myself.
There's a place doing them for £99, and that's gameseek.co.uk for those who are interested. They've not got that many left. I think there's about 44 in stock at the moment. It's a great little handheld device because it suits me, as I don't usually get access to the TV, as my daughter and wife are often using it. So I can sit on the sofa, pair of headphones in, and virtually any system up to the PlayStation. I've got access to
the PlayStation. Wow,
even to the PlayStation. I've got to admit, I've not tested the emulator yet for the PlayStation. I should imagine some games run fairly jerky and slow. Mm. But the great thing about this device is that you can overclock it. There's an option on there. Basically, the processor can run quite fast. So even if the emulator's not running too great, you can overclock it and it'll speed things up.
That's fantastic. Have you got any arcade games for it?
Yes, I've downloaded a few. Unfortunately, Double Dragon 1 has problems if you have the sound on, but there's an option to turn the sound off and it runs at full speed. But everything else I've tried has been fine. It would be just my luck that my favourite game doesn't work too well on there. It emulates the Sega Mega Drive flawlessly.
Fantastic, man. I love that
great
console.
So it's great console, and plenty of games on there. It's NES and SNES. Everything so far that I've tested has been fine. There's Amstrad's emulator, Commodore 64. I've got to admit, I've not checked that one out yet. I've heard it can run a bit slow, but the Amstrad one seemed fine. I was playing Shinobi.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really nifty device, and you just hook it up via a USB lead, or you can unplug it. It takes SD memory cards.
Right, okay.
Just download your ROMs, slap them on there, and away you go. It's pretty,
you know what? I'm going to have to get myself one of those, Dean, because that sounds absolutely fantastic.
That
brought you an amazing present, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did. I can't grumble. It's something that I've used every day since I've had it, and I will continue to do so, no doubt.
Well, I mean, all I got was a pair of socks. Actually, I can't complain. I got a pair of trainers for my wife, and I got a nice Ben Sherman shirt, and the usual pair of pants, some deodorant. I think my family are trying to tell me I stink, But gaming-wise, I treated myself to that little emulator on the iPhone, the iMame, which has now been pulled from the App Store.
Yes, I'm glad I downloaded that in time.
Did you manage to play around with the iMame?
I did, yeah. I've not put too many games on there because I've only got a 16 gig iPhone, so I'm out of space quite a bit. But yeah, everything that I've got on there seems to work fine. The controls are a bit fiddly. It's I find it a bit unresponsive, or the directional pad doesn't work too great. But if you've got arcades, the unit for the iPad, then it looks great. I wish I had an iPad, but I can't afford one at the moment.
I've got one here. Me and my wife, stupidly last year, we just put one on the credit card, even though we can't afford it. But it's a nice little app on the iPhone. I'm glad I've got it. And like you said, the controls aren't overly fantastic, but it's just amazing for the fact that you can actually get like games like Midnight Resistance or Robocop the arcade game or Alien on your iPhone.
Well, it's just strange. If you'd told me in 1988 when I was playing all these games that one day you'll be playing those exact replicas on your phone, I mean, phones back then anyway were like house bricks. They needed a power pack to power them up. And now, you know, we're running these little gadgets and, yeah, they're so powerful. It is amazing.
I'm tempted to get one of those old classic phones just to keep it old school, you know, walk around when I'm at the bus stop.
Drag it around.
Yeah, someone will call me and I'll sort of like power up the battery to get the phone going. You know, I just want to see what sort of looks I get.
Oh, it would be funny.
All right, but anyway, so I've got some amazing news as well, which I want to share. It's not gaming related, and I don't think I've even told you about this. Now, I've just found out about this New Year's Eve. I'm going to be your dad again, mate.
Oh, well done, mate. Well done.
Hey, yeah, so baby's going to be born. Hopefully, all will go well. September. So, yeah, that's my amazing news.
Oh, good. Now, you're going to give it a retro name.
I was thinking about calling it Dizzy. You know, but I don't think the wife will agree.
No, I can't see going too well on that.
For me calling it Optimus Prime, so I think she's going to let me, you know, she's going to pick the name. I've got no say.
If you're going to call it a Transformer name, it's got to be called Megatron.
Megatron.
Baby Megatron.
What about Grimlock?
Me, Grimlock.
Or Unicron, the destroyer of planets. All right, then. So I think that's us covered about, you know, what we've been up to, really. Oh, no, there's one more thing I want to talk about. I've got a new thing that I'm going to be doing this year. It's a Beat a Game a Week challenge.
Ooh.
Now, basically, I just thought I don't get enough time for gaming, but occasionally I get half an hour here, half an hour there, just to unwind and chill out. So I've decided to set up this challenge for myself, which is, well, I'll beat a game every week. Now, I've already beaten two games over the past 2 weeks. Now, the first game I finished was Bruce Lee.
Yep.
Love it. Classic game. I think it was published by US Gold. Amazing little game. Nice and easy to finish. It's still as good as I remember it. And I think the reason why I like it is because it's nice and easy and I can finish it just like that. And it always gives me a self of accomplishment, you know, that I've done really well on that.
Yeah.
So, and the other game I finished as well, this week actually, just I think it was this morning when I woke up about 6-ish, was Quick Snacks on the ZX Spectrum, which...
Oh, you finished it.
Yeah, I've got to say to Glenn, it is the superior version.
No doubt about it. How many levels has Quick Snacks got?
Not that many. I think it's probably about, 50? No, not even that. So many screens. Because I think each level is broken up into different lands. Iceland, Cuckoo Land, and etc. And I think they've got about 5 things with a bonus level in between. So it's a fun game. And again, it's easy. It's one of the games I keep on going back to. So I'd highly recommend... Guys in the community, try and finish those games out. Try and finish Bruce Lee. Try and finish Quick Snacks. And then give us your feedback on the forum. Let us know, you know, what you think of the games. It would be nice to get your feedback.
You've certainly picked 2 great games here, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I think next on the list is Robocop, the arcade, which I'll try and do next week.
Ooh, that's rock hard. I always find that very hard. Spectrum version I can do easily, but the arcade version, no.
You know what? I might do the Specky version, actually. That is, I prefer that more than the arcade.
Yeah, I found it more playable, if I'm being honest.
So, yeah, guys, give that a go. The Beat a Game a Week challenge. And again, let us know. And if you can think of any games that aren't too difficult that you'd like to see me try and beat, let us know. And I might take up that challenge.
Airwolf.
Oh, God, that's unbeatable. There's no way I'm doing that. Would reach the Christmas episode and you'd be like, so Andy, how many games have you finished? And I'd be like, none. I got stuck at Airwolf.
Stuck on the first screen. That is too hard. That is ridiculously hard.
I think that's one of the topics we'll talk about in another podcast, the hardest games ever on the on computers and consoles. Move on to the gaming news.
Okay.
What have you got for us then, Swainy?
I have got, well, the first thing I'm going to mention is Blaze, who do all these Sega handheld systems and Atari re-releases. They're bringing out a little handheld gadget, very similar to the one that I was talking about. It's called Game Gadget. Now, this is going to be released sometime in January this year, which is the month we're in. It's going to retail for £99 also.
Right.
What they're aiming to do is they want to be the new iPhone for the retro. Basically, it's going to be an app store. So you'll be downloading games and paying for them, unlike the other system, but this is all legal. I think we need to see how well the actual device can emulate these different systems that have been released over the years. And also, it depends with this, if the publishers do want to actually get involved and put their games on Game Gadget's store.
That's what I was thinking, you know, what publishers, what rights are they going to have? Because that's all the success of a certain game, you know. If it's got all the publishers behind it, then I'm sure it'll do well. But if they say, no, you can't actually release that, no, you can't. So
yeah, this is the thing. If it doesn't get the support from the publishers, then this thing is going to fail. Hopefully that won't be the case, but I've got a feeling that it will be. Like you said, it really does depend on what games get released. If there's nothing decent out there, these things aren't going to be worth buying. So,
what's out there at the moment, then?
Well, it hasn't actually been released, and they're not telling us so far, you know, what games will be available for it. So we don't know at the moment. There's also, apparently, it's going to be open source to developers, so
right. It'll
be a system that's fairly easy and cheap to develop for. But, you know, until this thing gets released and we know exactly what games are going to be available on the store for it, it's caution at the moment.
Well, I'm hoping that some of the Sega games will come out for it, because the people that make this, don't they sort of release these things with Sega games sometimes?
Well, this is the thing. They've definitely got strong ties with Sega and Atari.
Right.
So, you know, they're two big publishers. If they can get a great big back catalogue from either of those two, we might see a bit of success for this thing. But even so, we're not 100% sure whether that's going to happen or not.
Well, I really hope this works, and I really hope it's really well marketed, because it could be a great machine. It could sort of like sell games for a decent price, which is another thing, but if it hasn't got the marketing, if no one knows about it, then it's...
Yeah, and I've got to admit, it's nearly went under the radar. It was only... I was going through some press releases, and I managed to spot it. But, you know, the thing that makes this different with the iPhone and iPad is this has actually got proper controls on it. You know, it's got a D-pad and it's got some buttons.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the phones and iPad, they're great, but the controls are always a bit iffy on them. Whereas this thing, it has got a decent controller. So if the right games come out on it, it should be a pretty decent system. But as we keep saying, it really does depend on what games get released.
Yeah. I think downloadable games on sort of handhelds are fantastic, like you said, on the iPhone or on the Android. But again, like you said, it's always let down by the controls. I think price-wise, games, they retail for about $1.99 on the iPhone, or $2.99, or sometimes a little bit more. And sometimes I've got such fond memories of these games, and it's nice to have them in my hand that I can play. Like, oh, I've been playing the iMame thing.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating that when I move up or move left, it doesn't control to the way I want it.
Yeah, you can't enjoy the games how you how they're meant to be played. I mean, I was trying to play Grand Theft Auto 3, and the controls on that aren't too bad. But even so, there's certain sections of the game that require precise control, and you just don't get that with the iPhone.
What does this handheld actually look like, then? Because you sent me an email, and I haven't quite looked at it.
Yeah, right. Well, it's rather plain-looking. The picture they've got is a white handheld device.
Right.
Imagine your iPhone. It looks around the same size as an iPhone 4.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it's fairly small. There's a little D-pad on the left-hand side, as there should be, and four buttons on the right-hand side. And there's shoulder buttons as well at the top. So,
is it just, I mean, like, how big's the screen on it then, if it's the size of an iPhone?
The screen itself looks slightly smaller than an iPhone screen. It's not as wide, because obviously it's got to make room for the controls. But it doesn't look too bad, but until you hold one in your hands, you know, I'm not too sure what the build quality is.
Alright, I think that's something that we'll definitely look forward to, and we'll stick that on a link on the site as well. So when this podcast goes up, we'll have a little link down there with a page to it, so that way you can follow it. So what's your next bit of news then, Sweeney?
Back in, I think it was 91, US Gold had secured the rights for Capcom's arcade game called Mega Twins. I'm not too sure if it was released on the 16-bit machines, but it never saw the light of day on the 8-bit machines. It was being developed for the Commodore 64, Amstrad CPC, and of course the ZX Spectrum. The Commodore 64 version hasn't been found, apart from the graphics, but there's no code picked up. But basically, the Amstrad and ZX Spectrum versions were found on a couple of discs bought at a car boot sale earlier on in 2011. And the person who bought them, he's actually into the retro scene, and he sent the discs off to the guys at World of Spectrum, and they've managed to pull the data from the discs, and we now have a playable first level of the Spectrum version, and I think it's three levels from the Amstrad CPC version. They can be downloaded, but you're probably best just viewing the videos on YouTube. So type in Mega Twins ZX Spectrum or Mega Twins Amstrad CPC, you'll see the games in action. And the Amstrad version's a lot more complete. It looks very nice, actually. It's got some nice graphics and nice scrolling. The Spectrum version is quite colourful. There's a bit of a problem when screen scrolls and there's trees on the screen, the top of the trees flicker a bit.
Yeah.
But it looks pretty good. The Spectrum version's fairly unfinished. There's a lot of sprites missing.
I'm going to have to actually download this, mate.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. You know, this is a game that was being advertised a lot in the magazines. There have been previews, and I think even one of the Amstrad magazines reviewed it. So whether it's finished or not, we don't know. But this was, you know, development discs that were found at car boot sale. Yeah, so, you know, it's a bit of gaming history that's been found, so it's worth checking out.
You know, you were saying about this game, I think it did come out on the Sega Mega Drive. I think it was known as Cheeky.
Yeah, I should imagine. Oh, was it under a different name?
Yeah, I think it's like from different regions, it had a different name as well, because I think I've played the arcade game on MAME, and it's got two different names, Mega Twins and something else. Is that the one where it kind of looks like Wonder Boy?
That's right, yeah, it's a cutesy platformer. So, yeah, it's interesting to see. I don't think I ever played the arcade version anyway, but, you know, got to admit, I was looking forward to the conversion. As always with the Spectrum, I always wanted to see how it would handle a bigger arcade game, and sadly, you know, it was towards the end of the machine's life, so I'm guessing that's why US Gold never bothered publishing it in the end.
So, yeah, it's a shame, though. I mean, how finished do you reckon the Spectrum game is? 30%, 40%,
80%? No, I'd say about 80%.
And if the game had got released from what you've seen, how highly, you know, would it have been well received?
I think so. I reckon you're looking at about 75-80% rating in the magazines at the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe higher. It depends, you know, like I said, it's quite unfinished. There's sprites missing. There's a bit of a problem with some of the scrolling. But yeah, it looks fairly good. There's a slight delay when you press fire to the reaction of your sprite swings a sword. So it depends if they could have sorted out those problems. But the Amstrad version does look very good.
I'll tell you what, I find it really amazing how these games just show up in certain places, because I remember ages ago someone saying that they had found some games found by Matthew Smith. There were some discs, and they were found somewhere, or they were bought somewhere.
Yeah, it's amazing how these things, you know, like, you'd think that these companies would have kept their stuff secure somewhere in a vault, or even if the company, you know, goes bankrupt, you would have thought someone, you know, the programmers would take care of their work and keep it.
But there's been stories of people getting canned and just getting chucked out.
Yeah, they get thrown into skips and what have you. It's amazing.
Yeah, which game would you like to see that never actually got finished? Because there's one game that I really wanted to see. I think it's called Toki.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's the Spectrum version. The Spectrum version of Toki. It was previewed in Your Sinclair magazine, and at the time the guy said that the screenshots that they've got on show were mock-ups, but he was working on the Amstrad version, and then he was going to convert the code over. So, yeah, he'd already done the conversion of Road Blasters for US Gold, and that was a fairly good conversion, especially on the 1-8K machine.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's probably beat Hockey. I'm sure there's a few other games. Last Ninja, the first one that never got released on the spec.
Yeah, I was wondering why that never got released. Also, Great Gianna Sisters?
Yes, I mean, that game was complete. It was due to go to the duplicators a day or so before Go Software, got into trouble with Nintendo. So those games, they're out. At least they were out there, whether they still exist or not. So
I think it would be fantastic. You know, if someone's got that, they could re-release that now onto World of Spectrum, because that game, Great Genesis, it's available everywhere now. You can get it on the iPhone, you can get it on all different...
You can even get it on the Wii Shop now.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, you know, Nintendo don't seem to have a problem with it. I think back then it was the only competition that Super Mario had, and of course the Mario games were supposed to be exclusive to Nintendo, so yeah, that's why it got pulled.
So, yeah. I've got a bit more gaming news. Choplifter is coming back on the 11th of this month, so yeah.
Oh, great. That's an old favourite of mine.
Oh, so, actually, I think it'll be out on Tuesday. So if this podcast is out on the Monday, this will be out the following day. And it's basically, I think I first played it on the C64, where you basically play this chopper and you're flying around, you've got to shoot things. But where I basically really got into it was on a Sega Master System. It was one of the first games I had on the Master System, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was an amazing little game. I don't know whether it's just nostalgia or whether it plays as good as I remember it, basically.
I think it's a playable little game. I mean, I remember playing the arcade version, and yeah, it was, you fly along, you had to shoot things, rescue people. Great little game, I thought. So I should imagine that would work pretty well. So I'm guessing that's coming out on the iPhone, yeah?
No, actually, it's coming out for Windows, it's coming out for the Xbox Live.
Oh, right, on the Xbox as well.
Yeah, I can't imagine this game costing too much.
No, it shouldn't do. It's fairly simple, but yeah.
800 on 400 Microsoft points. Yeah. It's Choplifter HD. Let me quickly read the press release. It says, in Choplifter HD, players take on the role of an up-and-coming rescue pilot asked to join the elite international helicopter rescue team. Pilots will have to be trained to command a variety of helicopters deployed on more than 30 different missions. Combining reality with elements of fantasy, missions will range from capturing military prisoners, extraction to saving survivors of viral outbreaks. Wow. Mm. Pilots must bank, hover, touchdown, and sometimes even shake zombies from the chopper during liftoff.
That sounds different.
It does sound different. It sounds like a reimagination. From what I can see from the screenshots, it looks like a little scrolling thing like the original Choplifter was, but with sort of 3D'd up, basically. It looks pretty nice.
Well, let's hope they've kept the playability going, because, it was a very good game.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. I mean, I've got hours of gameplay on the Sega Master System.
Mm.
It's as good as I remember it. So again, guys, we'll post the link to that on the site, and if you do buy it, let us know what you think. Right, so my next bit of gaming news is a game made by Retro Souls. Now, there's three different versions. There's the PC version, which I think you have to pay for. It's not very expensive. I think it's called 8-bit something. And on the Spectrum and on the NES, it's called Alter Ego, and it's completely free. Have you heard about this one, Twainy?
I did see something on it, yeah. I think I watched a bit of footage on YouTube. It looks pretty good.
It does actually look pretty good. At first glance, it looks very basic. It's like a little platformer, kind of like Chucky Egg. And basically, you control two characters, which is where the Alter Ego name comes from. So one is on one side of the screen and one is on the other. It's kind of like your mirror image, basically. So if you go up one ladder on one part of the screen, and there is no ladder on the other part of the screen, your mirror image still goes up, like if he's going up a ladder. Mm. And the whole idea of the game is you have to try and collect these little items while avoiding the baddies. Now, I think by having two characters in one, I think it's like a puzzle element as well, by trying not to get hit.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, the PC version looks phenomenal, and the Spectrum version, looks pretty good as well. This is one game, again, that I haven't played, but as soon as we finish recording the podcast, I'm going to upload that and give it a go.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it really does, actually. It looks pretty nice. Can't wait to play it. I like playing new ZX Spectrum games.
Well, over 2011, I think there was over 100 new games released.
Wow.
So, you know, it was a great year for the Spectrum, and hopefully 2012 will be even better.
Well, a lot of the games in 2011 were probably done by Jonathan Caldwell. He just seems to release a game every 5 minutes.
He does knock a few out, doesn't he? He's a good programmer.
He's like the porn director of, what's it called, retro gaming. He just knocks them out all the time, you know. It's amazing how he does that. I'd love to get him on the podcast one day. I will try, guys, to get him on the podcast.
I've spoken to him via email. Seems like a nice enough guy. He was actually at the retro event.
Was he? Oh, man.
He was, but sadly we missed him. It'd be great to get him on.
I'll tell you what, Swain, you can work your magic. Email him, tell him how amazing, you know, we are. And see if he'll agree to...
I'm sure he will. I'll try and get that sorted out.
Right, now that'd be fantastic, man. I'm a big fan of his work, especially the Egghead series.
Yeah.
My last bit of gaming news is Super Mario 64 finally gets a sequel. Yeah, now basically this is a ROM hack. I can't remember who the guy is that... hold on, I think his name's Skillux. And basically, the hack's been named Super Mario Star Road.
Right.
And it's got over 120 stars to collect, more than 30 nicely designed areas, 50 catchy tunes, and it's basically Mario 64, but a whole new adventure. You know, you can go on trains, you can climb up beanstalks, you can go in the clouds, and honestly, it looks fantastic. You know, I don't know if you've seen this, Quainy.
No, I haven't. No, I was a big fan of the first version, but it's been a long time since I've played it, but it's one of the most famous games ever. I'm sure, you know, a new version of it with new levels and worlds, what have you, play really well.
Well, I think, you know, the way this works is it's like a ROM hack, so you technically should own the original N64 version, and so if you have got the ROM for the PC, you attach that ROM hack to this actual ROM, and then it completely recreates and changes the world, but it looks amazing. Honestly, the amount of time that this guy spent doing this must be amazing. I mean, I can't begin to comprehend how someone can create a whole 3D world, like, with a map editor.
Yeah, strange. But, you know, some of these people, they're so devoted to what they're doing. I'm going to have to take a look at that myself.
Oh, no, definitely. Check it out. Because, I mean, it just looks simply stunning. I mean, I'm blown away by this. I think this is something else I'm going to have to play. And again, guys, if you do play it, let us know exactly what you think of it, you know. But, yeah, again, like I was saying, it's basically like he must have got like a map editor and recreated everything. And I've tried using map editors for 2D games. I've tried Dizzy Age.
Yeah.
And I ran out of patience creating my game.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I'm one of these people. I have to be shown how to do stuff a lot of the time. Then I can get started. But it's like there's a package out there called Game Creator, and I think that's the one that Glenn uses to make his Dizzy games. I just haven't got the patience to, you know, sit there and learn it all. I wish I did have, because I've got some great ideas on making some games, but I'm just too impatient. That's why I guess I've always been involved more with doing the graphics, because you get, obviously, you draw something and it's there to see, whereas with programming or anything like that, it takes months and months to get a result.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what you said, being the artist, you showed us on the forum your mock-up of Shinobi.
Oh, yeah.
That was really good, mate. I was really surprised, you know, how well it turned out. Like, nowadays, that could be easy to be done. All you'd have to do nowadays is, like, get the arcade screenshot, strip away the colour, there you go. But you did this using a Spectrum art package.
Yeah. For anyone who hasn't seen it, there's a topic on the forum. Basically... One of my friends, when I was a kid, he was really into Shinobi, and he kept going on and on, what's it going to look like on the Spectrum. So there was a screenshot in, I think it was CMVG magazine, and I basically sat there and copied it. It probably took me about a week and a half to do, and it was just what I thought it would look like on the Spectrum. So what happened was, I'd saved it onto a tape, and I gave that to my friend, and it was probably last month now, I got a phone call from him, and he said, I found a few tapes up in my mum and dad's loft, one of them's got your name on, do you want it? So I said, yeah, I'll take a look at it, see what's on there. Loaded it up on my real Spectrum, and I couldn't believe that I'd done this at, I was about 13, and it's probably better than some of the Double Dragon work that I've done. I was quite shocked.
You probably had a lot of time to spend though as a youngster. You got a lot more free time,
And it's strange because, I had this art package and a lot of people would never have known that these things were out on the Spectrum. I actually ordered it from seeing an advert in a magazine. And, I used to spend a lot of time doing loading screens, but some of them were okay, and I was thinking of sending them off to publishers at the time, but I was only young.
Because a lot of these young guys, programmers, were youngsters, like yourself, basically.
Yeah, I don't know, I just thought, no, I'm too young, and, unfortunately, I never did send... I had one thing that was meant to be published, this was actually normal line work on paper.
Right.
An advert for Double Dragon 2. I knew I knew he was publishing it. So I sent that off to them, and they seemed pretty interested, but in the end, they went for the American artwork.
That's a shame. But hey, at least they considered that,
Yeah, but going back to that Shinobi screenshot, I'm actually looking at the sprite. I would like to try and animate it, see how that turns out. And I don't think it'll be used for a Shinobi game, but... if I bung it on the forum somewhere, one of the guys might be able to use it for a game.
Oh, no, definitely, I think, that would be fantastic. That me and you have knocked up, we've played around with ideas about, a back-to-school remake called... Office Days.
Now, that, I think, is a great idea. I can certainly see a game.
I would love to see that. I mean, do you think there is a possible way of... getting the original game, hacking it, and just changing the graphics a little bit?
Well, I don't know, because the thing with Spectrum is there was so little room in the memory, so a lot of the things are, they're programmed in there so tightly that if you alter any of it, you're going to have problems. You'd probably be better off starting from scratch. It's strange, because there's a guy out there, James McKay, he's working on the Spectrum version of School Days... Class of 1999, and he's having trouble getting that running, even on a 1-to-8K machine.
Yeah.
A PC version of Office Days would be great. It's just finding someone who's got the patience and the time to devote to creating a game from scratch. But
that should be another topic on the forum we should have. I think another topic would be like. Games that you wish had been made, which never were. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Office Days,
Yeah.
I think that's definitely for them.
I think we can make happen at some point. I'm definitely up for doing the graphics on it. Just finding a programmer.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's out there who is a programmer would love to try and make Office Days, let us know. That would be fantastic.
Certainly would.
All right. So I think that's all us rounded up with our news. Why don't we roll on with our music choice? Tell us the name of the track that you're going to play, or who and what game it is, and why you like it so much.
Right.
And then we'll take it from there.
Sure. This is one of those tunes, as soon as you hear it, well, for me anyway, I don't remember what game it was, what I was doing around that time. The track is from Turrican 2. It's the first level's soundtrack from the Amiga version. So anyone who's got an Amiga, I should imagine, has heard this music. For all those who haven't, it's take a listen. Let me know what you think. I think it's a great track.
All right, we will do. Enjoy the track, guys. Right, so now we're back. So which is the next section? Oh, it's time for our game review, Swainy.
Cool, right. Well, the game I've been playing again this week is, matter of fact, it ties in with the weather we're having. It's Cyclone on the ZX.
Oh, right. I've not heard of this game or played this game, so fill me in, mate.
If you've never played this game, it was released in 1985. It was the follow-up to a game called TLL, which was released by Vortex Software. Now, TLL saw you flying a plane around, and it was very fast, and the controls were quite hard to master. Whereas with Cyclone, you're flying a helicopter around. It's a bit like Desert Strike on the Mega Drive.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And basically, the aim is you've a few islands, I think it's 5 or 7 islands, and you've got to rescue people from these islands and pick up food supplies. Now, the main target is actually the food supplies, not the people. If you pick up all the food supplies, you complete the game. But you can pick up people who need to get away from these islands while this cyclone's flying over.
Right.
And basically, on the screen, you've got a meter, and it tells you how, if the cyclone's near to you and how strong the wind is, and the closer the cyclone is, the harder the helicopter becomes to control.
Right.
It starts blowing you around, basically. So, it's a great game. It was actually given away twice on Sinclair User Magazine. Towards the end of the Spectrum's life. Yeah, that's why I'm surprised you've never played it.
No, I must have missed that issue, actually. But then again, I was more of a Crash Magazine, which we'll talk more a little bit about afterwards, but...
Yeah.
Who was this game published by again, sorry?
Right, they've done Alien Highway, Android 1.
Oh, Android 1, I know, yeah.
Yeah. What else? Deflector.
Yeah.
8, which was published under Gremlin Software.
Right.
Yeah, there's quite a few. Astral Convoy, I've got to admit, I do not remember that. That's one of their earlier games by the looks of things. But TLL, which was Tornado Low Level, was the first game, and Cyclone was the follow-up.
Right, so was this game a full budget release, or just like a...
No, this was a full price release.
Full price game, okay.
So it's released in 1985, so you're probably looking about £7, I would have thought, for a full price release around that time. But it's a nice looking game as well. It uses quite a bit of colour, and yeah, it's just very atmospheric. It's a great little game. Like I say, if you're into... what's the Mega Drive game? See, my memory...
Desert Strike.
Desert Strike. it's very similar to that, but you're not shooting things. You just go around and, you know, rescuing people and picking up cargo.
There was a game like that as well that I used to play that the Codemasters made. It kind of reminded me of Desert Strike. You'd have to go around. It was like from top-down view screen, and you'd fly around, collect things, shoot things, move on to the next section. And it was like Desert Strike, but on the ZX Spectrum. It's unbelievable.
That's something else I'll have to try and check out then, because I quite enjoy the Desert Strike games, and this is sort of a top-down view. It's not from an angle like the Desert Strike game was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no good at describing these things. If you take a look on YouTube, just type in Cyclone ZX Spectrum, you'll see what I'm on about.
Will do. So what was the music like then? You know, any noticeable...
there's no music in the game, which, for me... Normally, I take a dislike to games that don't have any music in, but this one, I didn't really need it. It's very atmospheric. You've got the sound of the helicopter, the winch on the helicopter when you pick people and the cargo up. So
yeah.
I'd like to see a modern-day remake of it, because you could have leaves and, you know, bits blowing around, and they could use special effects to try and show the wind and, you know, a decent soundtrack and what have you. But, yeah, for a Spectrum game, it's very atmospheric.
Great, I think it's one I'm definitely going to have to check out, Swainy, because I've never played it, and like, it always surprises me when I hear about a game that I haven't played. I'm like, oh, God, I've got to play it.
Yeah, this is, you know, without doubt, one of Spectrum's finer moments, I think. So it's a shame it was surprising, really, that you've not played it.
Well, I'll remedy that by next time we talk. You know, you'll be like, so what did you think of that game? And I'll be like, I loved it. Right, so let me quickly move on to my game that I want to talk about. Now, the game I want to talk about is Kickstart 2 on the C64.
Right.
Now, I absolutely love this game. Now, one of the things that I love about this game so much was, like, I first played it on the ZX Spectrum, and it's a two-player game. Yeah. You play this little motorbike, like the TV show, basically, and you've got to go over these objects, like ramps, jump over phone boxes, like ponds, go through gates, logs. It's all about skill. You've got this little power meter, and depending on how fast you can go, you know, you'll fall off certain objects, or you need to go at a certain speed to so you can jump over at a certain object.
Right.
But it wasn't until I played the C64 version that I fell in love with this game.
Yeah,
the C64 version is phenomenal.
Yeah, whereas the Spectrum version isn't too hot, is it?
No, I mean, it's not a bad version, Swain. Don't get me wrong. It looks good. The graphics are nice, but it's even got the construction kit, which was what made Kickstart 2 amazing.
Yeah.
But the C64 version, the intro music, the title music, I find that one of my favourite soundtracks ever. It's just so catchy. And then when you do get into the main game, you've got that amazing little catchy tune that plays again and again and again. And it's really jolly. And what I like about this game was it was one of the first two-player split-screen games that I played. And it was basically me versus my cousin. We were trying to sort of like, who could get to the, you know, the end first. And it was amazing. We used to play this for hours, you know?
I've got to admit, I've never played the C64 version. I think I'm going to have to check it out.
I'm actually surprised about that.
Yeah, it's strange. Well, there's lots of games on the Commodore 64 that I've never tried because I never had one of my own. And I tend to, you know, when I go back to games or I'm trying something out, I always seem to try the Spectrum version first of all. I guess it's what you brought up with. And I like to see how they compare. But, yeah, I remember playing it on Spectrum. It was okay. It was good. But I think with that game, it was developed initially for the C64. So, you know, you had the original programmers working on that version, then it was converted to the Spectrum. And that's really where, you know, back then, games fell down a bit. All the Commodore was obviously, it had the hardware to do those sort of games a lot better than the Spectrum.
It had scrolling as well, because the scrolling was pretty good. Yeah. And that's one thing that lacked on the Spectrum version. On the Spectrum version, basically, your motorbike mostly stayed on the centre of the screen.
Right.
And it was more like the objects moving towards you as opposed to the screen scrolling.
Yeah.
But it didn't have that feeling of movement like the C64. But again, it's all about skill, you know. It's easy to pick up because you can sort of like ride your motorbike, do little wheelies, but you really had to put a lot of time and patience into it because you've got these fences and you just had to sort of speed up just below the middle of the meter, because otherwise if you went too fast, you'd fall down and you'd have mud, you'd have fire. It was amazing, but I think I got so much fun and gameplay out of it when we started creating, you know, our own courses.
Yeah.
Because it had like a little map editor. And again, would I be able to do this now? No effing way. Back in the days, I would spend hours doing that.
Yeah.
And would create the most insane, impossible levels.
It's a shame that more games don't come with those sort of features.
Well, there is one actually now, which, if you haven't played on the Xbox 360, I'd highly recommend. It's a game called Trials HD.
Yep, yeah, I have played it.
Yeah, which is very, very similar to Kickstart. Control-wise, it's different, but it has got a construction map as well, which I'd highly recommend. So, yeah, I don't think I did an amazing job describing Kickstart, but you know what I'd say, guys? Give this game a go, and you'll see why I love this game so much. It's just, I'd give it a 10 out of 10.
Really?
It is that good, mate.
Yeah.
It is that damn good.
No, I'll certainly check that out then.
Right, so let's move on to our next section then, Swainy.
Okay, well it's Crash Magazine, I believe.
Crash Magazine was one of the best ZX Spectrum magazines of my childhood. I loved it more than your Sinclair User. What did you think of Crash then, mate?
It was the first Spectrum magazine I actually bought. Now, the issue I've got, I can't remember, it must have been Christmas 1987, and it was huge. It had probably about 200 pages, if not more.
Wow.
Nice cover, great memories of that magazine. I always liked their reviewing style. It was three takes on a game.
Yeah.
You know, you had three different reviewers, and you had their opinions, and so it was nice. I should imagine that a lot of the time it was actually the same guy writing the three opinions, but that's it.
It was a split personality.
Yeah, but yeah, it was certainly at that time, it was probably the better of the three Spectrum magazines. I've got to admit, towards the end, I preferred Your Sinclair because it was a funnier magazine.
Yeah.
I was never too keen on Sinclair User, but yeah, Crash, I don't know, at its peak, it was absolutely amazing.
I mean, what drew me towards the magazine was the cover, which were mostly done by Oliver Frey.
Yeah.
And he was just simply amazing with the cover work he used to do. They were mind-blowing, you know. Apparently, he started off, he was a big fan of the Dan Dare comics back in the days. And, you know, he would draw them, and he got really good. And he even got his work published by, I think, in some of the later Dan Dare sort of comics.
Yeah, I believe you're right. The covers were pretty amazing. You know, sometimes the artwork on the cover of Crash Magazine was better than the actual game artwork. And he probably had very little to go on, you know, he probably saw a screenshot or maybe the game running slightly, you know, because these covers obviously had to be produced quite a way ahead of the magazine reviews, and yeah, they were great. But, you know, the actual writing in the magazine, it was, at the time, it was, I don't know how to describe it, it didn't take itself too serious, but it was probably the most serious out of the three magazines at that time.
Well, let's talk about the review team then, Swaney. I mean, most of the review team are a bunch of youngsters, basically.
That's right, yeah. They were getting school kids to review games, so I guess their opinions matched mine while I was, you know, at that age. Because I remember picking up a few Spectrum magazines before I actually had the machine. That my, one of my friends had a Spectrum long before I did.
Right.
And this was probably 1984, 85. And a lot of the magazines that were out at that time were too serious. Sinclair User went a big change. At first, that was a very serious magazine. And Your Sinclair, at that time, was actually called Your Spectrum. And again,
I had no idea about that.
Yeah, again, it was a totally different magazine. And then they were rebranded to catch up with Crash, because Crash had aimed at the school kid market rather than the young adult who had been buying the computers. And obviously, it was selling a lot better than those magazines. That's why they were revamped. So, yeah, Crash magazine was the one that I identified with, first of all.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was the whole package, Swenny. For me, it was the amazing artwork, because, again, Oliver Frey, he could get, I don't know, any game and just do this, I don't know, sublime, you know, like artwork, and you'd be like, wow, I need to play this game, and then you'd buy the game, and like you said, you'd see the cover, which wasn't as good on the actual game, but it would make you really enthusiastic about playing that game. And the other great thing was the Crash cover tapes as well.
Yeah, the cover tapes were good. What I liked about it, though, it was they had a great tip section.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you had the game maps in there. It just, at its peak, it had everything covered so well. It's a shame that, I think it was late 1989, they revamped their magazine, and I think there was different reviewers working on it and different people doing, you know, behind the scenes work, and they changed the layout of the magazine. And although I kept on buying it right up until its last issue, it wasn't as strong, I felt. It was a shame.
What was the last issue like? I can't remember. I don't think I ever got those.
Well, it's strange because Newsfields went bankrupt, and then it went to, I think it was Europress.
Right, yeah.
And they revamped it for the third time, I believe, and it wasn't as strong. I think it only lasted two or three issues under Europress, if I remember rightly. So it was okay, but it wasn't as good as Your Sinclair by that time.
Yeah, I think towards the end, I think it was, the editor was Lucy Rickman, and one of my favourite reviewers at the time when that issue was around was this guy called Nick.
Right.
And
Nick Roberts.
I think it might have been, but yeah. I think he had a bit of character to him. You know, it was nicely done, but it slowly was declining. I think the ZX Spectrum was slowly losing out to more modern machines as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the people who had wrote for the Spectrum magazines, they had started to go onto the Amiga and Atari ST magazines, and probably, you know, the consoles around that time. So yeah, we was getting new staff in who weren't quite as familiar with the machine.
Let's talk about that then, Swenny. Who were the main review team? Because I'm sure there was pretty big names, wasn't there? Wasn't Rignall one of them, or
He worked on Zap magazine, which was by the same publisher for the Sister magazine for the Commodore 64. Yeah, you had Nick Roberts, who's the main one who sticks out for me. He still works for Imagine now, who published Games TM and Retro Gamer. Robin Candy, I think he was actually their techie guy. They used to have like program listings in the back. Mm-hmm. I think he wrote that section. I can't remember many of the writers for Crash Magazine because it was all kids, and I think a lot of aliases were used as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I could relate to it, because it was written in a style which I could relate to. But we were luckily enough to see Oliver Frey when they were doing the Crash talk at the Replay Expo, and they were saying that they went into schools and they gave them like some sort of like form, and they had to sort of fill it out, and that's how they worked out the reviews sometimes like that.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff, and a lot of school kids were going to Newsfield of an afternoon after school to review games, so it's probably quite a fun place to hang out, I guess. And but it transferred over very well to the magazine, because it actually started off as a leaflet, like a pamphlet for, they were publishing, not publishing games, selling games.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, it took off in a big way. So, yeah, it's a great magazine. I wish that there was an equivalent to that today. I really do.
Well, I'm hoping of adopting certain things from Crash into, Retro Asylum. I'd like the fact that one day, me, you and Glenn, we actually review the same game.
Yeah.
So that way you've got three opinions of the same game. So it would be interesting. And then maybe, it could be video reviews, and then maybe, the community could decide which review they prefer, to add a little bit of competitiveness towards it.
Yeah, I think, that is the main standout point for me for that magazine, was the three opinions for each review. Because that way you really did get, three honest opinions, and you normally, at least with me, I remember Nick Roberts, and I usually always agreed with his stuff, rather than, there was some, I can't remember their names unfortunately, but there was certain reviewers who, if they rated a game, I was very cautious of what they recommended, because I've been stung a few times on their recommendations in the past.
You weren't one of those kids that actually bought Renegade 3, were you?
I was, because I was a huge fan of that series. The first two games were amazing. And I'd read in, I think it was Crash Magazine, that Mike Lamb and Don Drake said about doing a follow-up to Renegades, Target Renegades. And then later on, it mentioned that they were no longer going to develop Renegade 3. It had been handed over to the developers of Operation Wolf. And Operation Wolf wasn't a bad game. It was very hard. It was a great conversion. So I thought, okay, and then, screenshots on the previews, I thought, hang on, here comes this dinosaurs instead of street gangs. It might still be a fun game. So, I went out and bought it, and Crash had actually give it a Crash Smash. And that's when a magazine does that.
They actually gave it a Crash Smash?
They gave it a Crash Smash. I'm pretty sure they did. And,
Oh, my God.
That was when, I stopped looking at that magazine as a guide. Yeah. And I carried on buying it. But, I didn't take much notes of their reviews from that point onwards.
But definitely, Crash Magazine, one of the highlights of my gaming youth and a lot of people's gaming youth, because it was a superb magazine. Right, so let's round that up. Let's move on to the little last section before we round everything up then, Swainy. Start rounding this up then. What I'd like to say is, guys, we've got now 12 iTunes reviews. I'm really happy, so thank you to everyone that's given us these reviews. It really helps the site grow and gets us noticed a lot more. We have now got, how many people on the site? We've got about 28, 29 people on the site who are regularly posting, so thank you very much for your hard work. I've got a big special thanks to say to Swainy for being an amazing co-host and helping the site. Big thanks to Glenn for being his cheerful, bubbly self and posting cool videos. Big thanks to Potty Boy for bringing his Tears series to the site I absolutely love the TV series because I never really played the Amiga, so it's nice to see that.
Yeah, certainly a system you should check out more, mate.
Yep, a big thanks to Asperger's Gamers. He's always bringing loads of videos to the site. Big thanks to Tony and Malk as well for uploading stuff and doing their Things Like That podcast. I'll have to get that one.
You had to.
Yeah. So, any thanks you'd like to say? Special mentions?
Special mentions. Well, I'd like to thank everyone as always. Yeah, Potty Boy with these Amiga videos. It's great seeing some of the stuff he's putting up because I was an Amiga boy and moved on to the Amiga after the Spectrum, and it's always nice to see these old games again. So it's because it's a system that's it's not as easy to emulate as the Spectrum. I tend to forget about a lot of the games. I've not revisited them, so it's great seeing them again. So thanks for that, mate.
So yeah, that's me rounded up. I would say thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. If you've got any ideas, any sort of feedback that you'd like us to do new things, let us know. Thanks very much, guys.
Cheers, guys. Bye. Let's have a look. Potty Boy, for some reason, he could never get on with Double Dragon. He loves swimming.
Really shock horror.
I know. I'll stop looking at that machine. That magazine as a guide.
Right, so let's move on to our next section then, Swainy.
Okay.
What is the next section?
That is a very good one.